Everyone's asleep. My very special guest today is Paul Matt, coming in as live from Australia. It's really good, actually. We've got this whole kind of Australia-New Zealand sort of camaraderie thing. There's often... Did you know I was actually suspended from school one time for racism because I gave an Australian crap about being Australian? I didn't realise that Australians were a race. And I thought it was a nationality, but...
Yeah.
I couldn't get out on a technicality, though. There weren't no legal representation in my court, unfortunately. Just a draconian school people. Now, anyway, Paul Mack, you're a chemtrail activist. Ordinary man, just looked up in the sky one day and saw that there was something going on. Had a look through 9/11. And it leads on, as many researchers have found, into all other areas of research. Everything's kind of like, I use the analogy of an anaconda mating ball. We have all these snakes writhing in and out of each other. That's kind of what the world of conspiracy has become. Many people don't like to use the conspiracy term because it makes people think that they're conspiracy theorists. Now, I define a conspiracy theorist as a person who absolutely believes, and you can't convince them otherwise, that powerful people who have a lot of influence use their power to maintain or grow their influence. And if you're not a conspiracy theorist, then you're a coincidence theorist. And you think that everything happens by sheer coincidence, and there's no such thing as backroom deals, no such thing as scumbaggery, no such thing as deceit. Which of those two groups of people appears more insane? I think it's self-explanatory.
Paul, pretty much.
Welcome to the program, Paul.
Thanks, Vinny. Great to be on the show, mate.
Now, you have a chemtrail protest coming up, is that true?
Yeah. We've had a few protests, Australians against chemtrails, Australian and New Zealand geoengineering protest. Been active all last year, pretty much every quarter, organising something to be happening on the streets of Melbourne to raise awareness. And, it's our first protest for 2014, kicking off Australia-New Zealand geoengineering protest, and we're in the middle of organising locations for that at the moment. But February the 15th, 12 noon, everywhere, every capital state, territory, and of course, Aotearoa as well. So... we'd like to get out on the streets and let the general public know what we're doing, raise awareness to the geo-crime that's raging above our heads every day, particularly in Melbourne. Well, through Victoria today, we've just been absolutely trashed. We've caught a number of planes spraying, probably up around the, 15, 20, 30, something like that nationally. We've had days between Sydney and Melbourne where we've caught over 70 aircraft chemtrailing, documented them. We've been photo documenting using the Flight Radar 24 program for some 18 months now. We've got mountains of data of all sorts of different types of commercial, military and private concerns, or conducting geoengineering.
We found in New Zealand when there was a very, very prominent, I call it a dog's ball chemtrail because they really stick out. We looked upon the web to look for a transponder. There wasn't one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've encountered that quite a bit too. We've seen plants going over. You can see them visually. You can see what they're doing, just not showing up on Flight Radar 24 or any of the other programs that we've been using as well. So, so they've got their IFF turned off, their transponder turned off, and most likely they're military or private contractors in that case.
Yes, that's precisely what a plane watcher told me, is that the only people who can turn them off are the military or completely private jets. Now, another thing that we've discovered here in Auckland is that they're never flying low. They're always flying at cruising altitude when they go over city centres, roughly 40,000 feet. This arises a couple of complications because you cannot identify a plane at all that's flying at 40,000 feet. You can tell whether or not it's twin engine, but without a transponder signal, you don't know what that plane is, what model or anything of that nature.
Other than, I mean, you know, a few of our guys now have equipped themselves with pretty comprehensive telephoto setups and things like that. Even with that technology, sure, you're not going to be reading the VIN number off the airframe there, which is why we have to rely then on programs like Flight Radar 24 that bring up, you know, who the airline is, basically what the airframe is, altitude, direction, heading speed, all of those sorts of things. So if it is not marked on Flight Radar 24, then yeah, pretty much it's just another plane flying, laying out a chemtrail, and we've not had the opportunity to pin it, sort of thing. So, but having said that, we've had the opportunity to pin thousands of planes now, and you know, we've got mountains of data which we're looking to present in a statement of fact to the government later on this year. So we've got more than enough information, but yeah, it'd be good to catch every single one for sure.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think is the intention behind chemtrailing in Australia, or is it the same intention the world over, in your opinion?
I think the intention's the same. However, we've noticed different types of chemtrail patterns. We've started to identify different types of chemtrails in terms of colour, makeup. There are people around who are very sensitive in the olfactory senses, if you like, and who can smell and taste chemtrails as they disperse into the atmosphere. And there certainly seems to be different types out there, and what they're all used for, we're not 100% sure yet, but we're starting to work out the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle as they come along. As far as Australia is concerned, and most likely New Zealand as well, it's an attempt on large-scale geoengineering. We've identified that they're always spraying before a storm front, whether that's to direct the front or lessen the rain. There's good anecdotal evidence that supports both those theories. And it seems to be more geoengineering-based rather than genocidally-based at the minute. Having said that, spraying poison anywhere in the air and letting it fall down on the populace is not a good thing, although it doesn't seem to be directly targeted at the populace at this stage for Down Under.
Mm. Now, it has been confirmed by a number of sources internationally that chemtrails do contain particulates of aluminium, strontium, and barium. And I was curious about this, and I wanted to know, what was the water contamination level, right? How many parts per million of, say, aluminium does it take to make water, quote-unquote, undrinkable? And it was only one part per million. One chemtrail being sprayed over an urban area going into the stormwater systems, water catchment areas, and things of that nature, or even falling particulates onto a river, I theorise, could conceivably contaminate an entire urban area's drinking water to make it undrinkable. And we don't know this stuff, and we're still drinking it, and there are no drinking water standards of any kind really testing for this. You only find what you're looking for.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're certainly aware of that as well. We've had a lot of our members conduct tests throughout the last 18 months, and that's soil, water, hair, fingernails, blood, that sort of thing. And we're seeing extremely high levels of the big three, aluminium, barium and strontium, more than we would expect to see from any, I don't know, they reckon there's aluminium normally occurring in the soils, but I dispute some of that probably. But certainly we're seeing very, very high levels and very high readings. And we're seeing, I guess, the EPA move to raise those, you know, those levels that have been extremely high to make them more safe for us, rather than, you know, doing something about the fallout. They're actually raising the levels in a few places as well. So, yeah, not good.
Can you elaborate a little bit further on this in terms of chemical contamination? What are the possible knock-on effects? Because I'm aware a number of environmentalists that I've talked to, something that seems to pop up consistently among their various fields of research, whether they're talking about air quality or pesticide contamination or radiation or anything of that nature, there are unforeseen knock-on effects, compound effects that seem to snowball as a result if these processes aren't stopped, and sometimes even if they are.
Yeah, well, we're certainly, like I said, we're certainly seeing the elevated levels in the environment. Immediate effects that we have noticed are the dying of vegetation. We've got a lot of trees that are very sick and poor in this country at the moment, and that's being echoed all around the world. Our crops, our food bowls are struggling as well, suffering. You can ask any amateur gardener around Australia right now, just ask them how their tomatoes went last year, and they'll tell you straight away, oh, went beautiful, like got them off the ground, really started to fruit well, and then all the plants started dying back. Fruit never ripened and coloured, things like that. You know, you just... things that are not the norm, like where you might have had years where you can consistently grow something in your back garden and all of a sudden it's just not growing anymore, it's dying back. But more out in the countryside, you know, we're seeing whole forests, you know, the tips of the branches and the trees are all dying back. Recently I was in the UK back in June up in Scotland and noticed it heavy trailing over there and noticed exactly the same things as we're seeing down here in Melbourne. You know, a lot of vegetation died back. Hedgerows that have been healthy for years and years have all started dying back. And I was pointing it out to a few people and they're going, oh, is that what's causing that, you know? Like, it all makes sense now, like blight's going on. So, you know, obviously people like Monsanto are out there kindly putting together aluminium-resistant seed stock strains now. And, you know, why would they be doing that? Well, they know there's going to be a coming food shortage and that those are the guys that are going to have the ability to feed the masses with their GMO crops, if you can call it feeding. You know, so that's the knock-on effect, the flow-on effect. It gets into the waterways. It starts, you know, getting into the food supply, and people are drinking it. You know, so there's
That means that there must be enormous amounts of perhaps unreported health effects.
Unreported, yes. How about reported but misconstrued? I mean,
or
people
ignored.
Have been reporting or ignored, exactly. I mean, you start with Lyme and more gallons, but I mean, people have been reporting respiratory illness, and that's that's just asthma on the rise. You know, high pollen counts, that sort of thing, or the increase in Alzheimer's or autism. You know, little bubbles there that are being explained away, but we know that these chemicals are highly poisonous to, you know, the neuroregenerative processes, and that people are, you know, record, you know, dementia is on the rise, Alzheimer's is on the rise. All these things, these degenerative diseases are on the rise around the world. And there's just no official explanation or no attempt anywhere to tie that into stratospheric aerosol injection at all. But it's, you know, it's happening.
I was speaking to somebody, I think maybe last year or the year before, who had a conversation with a medical doctor. This medical doctor was one of the kind of typical not awake medical doctors. And this person asked the doctor about Morgellons disease. And the doctor piped up and says, yeah, I've got a patient with Morgellons disease, but it doesn't exist.
Exactly. Exactly. We've got a lot of sufferers in our groups around Australia and New Zealand. We've made contact with a lot of sufferers throughout the world, in fact, and every single one of them will tell you exactly the same thing. You know, they're trying to find a doctor who's sympathetic and who will diagnose this, but it seems that, you know, in the medical community, it doesn't exist, you know. It's they're trying to fawn it off as some kind of psychotic episode that the sufferer is having, as opposed to, you know, the fact that things are coming out of their skin and, you know, are being, you know, tested as being foreign bodies, as being polymers, you know, polymer filaments coming out of them. So, you know, they've got to get in there somehow, eh?
What occurs to me is that they're sorry, continue.
No, you're right. But I was just going to recap there by saying, it's not being reported. Not being reported by the medical community.
Indeed, I was sent an email a number of days ago by a New Zealand Morgellons sufferer who has documented quite well his case in an effort to get justice from the medical system here in New Zealand. And the pictures he has released of his body are harrowing. They are terrible. It's like, have you ever seen a lesion? You know, they look really horrible, or like an infected school sore or something of that nature. But they're like little pock marks all over his body. Like they look almost bruised, but they're not. It looks like dead skin patches, and these fibers start to come out of it. And he's got close-up pictures of him actually plunging a needle into these little wounds, and then hooking a fiber, and then just literally pulling them out of his skin until they break. And he's got this very well documented, and still the medical doctors say there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you. He's covered in these things, his back, his chest, his arms, his face, everything. And I think that this is one of the side effects that doesn't affect everybody of chemtrails. One could theorize that these fibers that these Morgellons sufferers experience coming out of their skin is a bad reaction, and that most people have these fibers in their body, but they're not having a bad reaction, that they're actually fitting in there. And indeed, what I think Max Egan has pointed out in his latest film, Transformation, is that these fibers are nanotech. They are self-replicating nanotechnology. And what appears to be the case is that they are growing along the lines of the nervous system, and they are conductive as well. You can put currents through them. And this is really quite terrifying, because it means that there is an artificial nanotech influence on your body that is growing along the lines of your nervous system that can send and receive potentially radio signals and or wireless. What happens? Okay, have you ever seen the movie Gamer?
No, I don't believe so.
Go watch that frickin' movie, man. You seriously, it freaks you out. Like, just kind of towards the end with a real bad guy, they've got this tech called nanites, and they nanotechnology that they implant in the brain, and it replaces the brain cells with nanites, rather. And they have a transmitter that can receive, okay? And you can't get them out once they're in. And what the bad guys plan was, people were doing it voluntarily. You know, prisoners who played a game called Slayers who would literally live and die on the battlefield, or people who would use them as a debauched sort of video game sort of thing where you can control real people.
I think I have seen the movie now. It's actually coming back to me, yeah.
And the bad guy, he pulls up this handful of dust and goes, you know what we can do? Is we've got billions of these nanites and we can just aerosol spray them and all this powder goes everywhere and people will just breathe them up. And then I can just send signals in and got an entire population who vote how I want them to vote, act how I want them to act, and pretty much do anything I feel that they ought to do.
Transhumanist agenda, right?
And what occurs to me is that Hollywood has no creativity left, and that in order to come up with ideas like that, they're not coming up with something original, they're copying something that exists in the real world. That's my theory. I could be wrong on that.
Well, predictive programming at the same time, you know, getting people mentally attuned to all of that. So, interesting statement you made up the front there. We have all breathed and are all breathing, you know, these stratospheric aerosol injections, these chemtrails. I was talking with a friend the other day and we had a discussion about exactly that thing exactly, and our summation was that people who are not showing effects of Morgellons are probably more likely to have assimilated this and have it working correctly or as it's supposed to be intended by the bad guys. And the people that are suffering from Morgellons are possibly even the lucky ones, because their bodies are rejecting this and trying to get it out. It's a bit of a twist on the topic, I know, but it's quite feasible that that's the case. You know, we're the ones that look and feel like they're okay are assimilating nicely, and the ones that are struggling with Morgellons or Lyme's disease as well, I think the two are almost synonymous, really. Are the ones that are rejecting it.
The term canary in the coal mine comes to mind.
True. It's a big topic, but, you know, like you say, you go and talk to a doctor about it, doesn't exist, right?
Doesn't exist. Now, I think that this is actually one of the another point that I want to raise with you and get your perspective on is media coverage regarding chemtrails. I'd like to share with you the New Zealand perspective. Is we have Michael Laws, who's kind of like the Rush Limbaugh of New Zealand, you know, sort of like top radio,
top radio
douche, and he coincidentally. I was driving home one day, like I only had to go to the shop and then come back. Couldn't have been in the car more than 3 minutes or so. Turn on the radio, and there he is saying, "I'm looking out the window of the studio right now, and it's a beautiful chemtrail day." Oh yeah, there's these people out there who actually believe in chemtrails, and they're all crazy. They're all completely crazy, you know. And the coincidence of me actually. You know, hearing it when I heard it, I think is almost, I don't know, maybe divine intervention is a bit too much of a stretch, but it occurs to me that this is not an isolated phenomenon, that the media itself appears to be at the forefront of the denial and at the forefront of the demonization of people like us.
I'd have to agree with that 100%, Vinny. When you said media coverage, you almost blurted out, what's that? You know, we don't get media coverage per se. We get shot at and ridiculed and belittled and, you know, told we're all crackpots and, you know.
Sorry, how's that different from media coverage? I don't...
that is the media coverage, I know. But, you know. I mean, look, you got to have a thick skin and to be a geoengineering activist or any kind of activist these days, I guess. But
pretty much,
you know, it's certainly not being covered. We're planning probably a few little media hijacking events this year. We will just get in the background of some big media shots and put up a few banners and things like that, just to I don't know, a bit tongue in cheek at them, really. But more to raise awareness than anything else. But yeah, no, it's non-existent, Vinny, unless it's there to misdirect. There's plenty of good media stuff that it's, you know, just aluminium chaff that the Air Force is using. I've heard that one in America, or you know, they beat up the persistent contrail theory. You know, increased it. Like, I mean, to promote their agenda, basically, to keep everyone off balance with it and not wanting to look into it because, you know, it's the domain of the crackpot, so to speak. So, you know, that's about all we can hope for until, you know, non-mainstream media really kicks in and has a bigger effect.
Repetition. This seems to be the most effective form of brainwashing known. It occurs to me that if we are to convince the general public of this phenomenon's validity, that we must employ this tactic, that it must be broadcast all the time, that it must be videoed and protested all the time. People must see it again and again and again and eventually believe that it's true without even looking at the evidence. But one would wish that people would do what we have done, thinking.
Critical thinking, oh no. Yeah, well, I mean, certainly that's, you know, my goal is in raising awareness is to get people thinking critically, to get them doing their own research, and to get them looking up, because it's a massive thing that goes off in your head when you suddenly realise what it is that you're looking at going on above your head. And I've had countless people come back to me and, you know, people that I've worked with for a little while. And when you see the light go off in their head, you go, oh, thank goodness, you know, they've finally got it. They're starting to reason and think critically for themselves that maybe, just maybe, that something else is going on here. So, yeah, it's all about raising awareness for me. And 2014, hopefully, is going to be a big year doing that.
And what is the date of your chemtrail protest?
February the 15th. So 2014, February 15th, and dates are being put up through Australian New Zealand Geoengineering Protest now, and we'll farm those out to the satellite groups as and when locations come online. We'll put up a list and promote the heck out of that for the last 2 weeks leading up to the protest. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we'll get a good turnout, see some numbers.
Yeah, it would be nice. The biggest chemtrail protest that we had here, I mean, I've led 3 chemtrail protests in New Zealand, and the first one was me by myself on a street corner.
Yep, me too.
The second one, I think we had about 25 people, all with banners and gas masks and all of that kind of stuff. Looked great. Marching down the main streets of Auckland, and we had a convoy where we went from busy intersection in the city, yeah. And then move a couple of suburbs over to another busy intersection, and then so on and so forth. So that way we wound up covering the entire city. In fact, I've forgotten one more that I travelled down to Hamilton, New Zealand, in order to do so. It does have an effect. In fact, I noticed that a surprising amount of people were tooting their horns, you know, when they drive past you. When I've got this saying, it's about your flag, okay? When you stick your flag out of the long grass, let's say your allies are in the long grass and there's a lion in the long grass. You stick your flag up, your allies can see you, but so can the lion. And I think what happens is people have been afraid to stick their flag up because they fear the lion, thinking that there are no allies there. I know different from experience.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, no, I have to agree. The sentiment's the same, very much Australia-wide, certainly with the protests we've had in Melbourne, which once we did get them off the ground were, you know, we sort of went 40, 50, 70, 80 to 100 or so, 1, 2 or 3. And that's growth. It's growing. It's not growing as fast as I'd like. But certainly people on the streets come up to you and say, look, I'm not on Facebook, but I understand what's going on. Good on you guys for getting out there and doing this, you know. Mm. And I think historically there is that fear, like, oh, you know, if I put my hand up here, you know, a black van's going to appear out the front of my house and strange men are going to get out, that sort of thing. But I mean, we've always promoted our events to be family friendly, and we've got mums who come along with babes strapped to them and pushers, and whole families get out, make it a family day. And that's, I mean, you know, people can call us what they want, but essentially we're just ordinary citizens who looked up one day, saw something going on, and we want answers to our questions. That's the bottom line. We're not, you know, secret squirrel type operatives or conspiracy nut jobs or whatever you want to. However you want to paint people who you know, care about the environment and want to do something about it, just ordinary people. And it's amazing, like you say, people who toot horns, flashlights, who will come and talk to you, you know, pull you up and say, hey, that's fantastic that somebody's getting out there and doing something about this, you know.
Now, those people, despite the fact that they don't join the protest or didn't know about it to come and attend it in the first place, I don't think they realise the part that they play is actually an essential part of the protest, because it encourages you. Had you had no reaction, had you had no positive words in your ear, the motivation to do it again would wane, I believe.
Oh, yeah, I think so. You know, personally, I'm committed to this as a protest for the long, a process for the long term. It's not something that I feel I can walk away from with all good conscience.
Well, I know chemtrails aren't something. Chemtrails aren't something you can get away from, are they?
No. I mean, you can put a water filter on to take fluoride out of your water. You can make food selections that are non-GMO and organic and healthy, but you can't get away from the air that you breathe and chemtrails being sprayed over your house, over your food bowl, into your water supply. You know, you can't get away from that. So, you know, when I saw that, I just thought, well, that's it for me. I mean, I think I finally found my niche in all of this kind of thing, you know. But, yeah, the encouragement you get from people along the way. And to be honest, Vinny, I'd say 90% of the encouragement I get is all positive. There's 10% of people that come up and are naysayers, and I'm quite happy to have a conversation with them. But it's very few. It's very few people. I don't get a lot of people presenting at our protests or rallies and coming in to make trouble. And I think, you know, they see, look, we're just ordinary family people. So, that, you know, I mean, it's not like we're hardcore or anything.
Perhaps the movement to expose chemtrails is not quite perceived as a direct threat to the establishment yet. It's not of the size by which they have to sit up and take notice. It's like, okay, there's one chemtrail protest, there's two, there's three, when there's hundreds.
Mm-hmm. And thousands on the street, mate. That's my goal. You know, mate, get them sit up, take notice. You know, we'll start blocking streets in the future and, you know, increasing the resource draw on us in our events, we hope. So, you know, currently we've got a pretty sweet little setup at the moment where they ask us whether we want to take the road or the footpath. So I'm hoping that sort of hangs around for a little bit too.
Do you have a PA systems, amplification devices of that nature?
We do. First thing I did was went out and bought a megaphone. So the man with the megaphone gets to make the most noise, I suppose. But it pretty quickly became evident with the numbers and the area that we're trying to fill that we needed something a bit larger. So a few guys from the group chipped in and we purchased a portable PA system. So that's where we're at the moment. You know, as it grows and gets bigger, we'll put more investment into it and make sure that we've certainly got a better sound system as it grows, you know.
Well, and indeed, what's good about being about having equipment and being a conspiracy theorist is that there are multiple uses for one piece of equipment, multiple different protests that you can attend and use that said equipment. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Dragged the megaphone along to the climate action protest in Melbourne just recently, where there was 35,000 half-educated, well-meaning people getting out to protest global warming, and it was handy to have there. I can tell you there was only sort of half a dozen of us went down and handed out some information. Got to speak with Tim Flannery. In fact, we interrupted a Channel 9 television interview with Tim Flannery. We just quietly sort of had a banner in the background, you know, just holding it up sort of thing, and this woman just came and jumped in between us and the back of Tim, and next thing you know, the journo and the camera crew are going, oh, come on, guys, you can't do this, and I thought, well, if you're not speaking to Tim, I will, and grabbed him for a few minutes, shoved a pamphlet in his hand. I said, do you know about this, Tim? And he agreed that he knew about chemtrails, he knew about geoengineering, but perhaps now wasn't quite the right time, but Ian, I should email him at his office this week, to which I've had no reply today. So.
Of course.
I guess Tim's you've got to catch him in the flesh, mate. He had a real spooked look on his face, so.
Well, yeah, you would do. I mean, well, and again, this is the other element that I would wish to come out with. Going back to that media thing that we were talking about, and you just did something there. You recounted it's called a media sabotage, right? If mm-hmm. we can sabotage the mainstream media at every single possible the targets of opportunity. Really, yeah. Because the media won't come and interview us, will they?
No.
They won't come and give us coverage, no. Will they? They will demonize us, they will attack us, and they will try and derail our movements. I say it's payback time.
I agree 100%.
It's only fair.
We'll see a few actions this year in Australia that will certainly be media photo bombing and disruptive, perhaps, but peacefully. I mean, we're peaceful people. We don't advocate violence in any way, shape, or form. You might remember that media article last year. It was in the papers over here about how pilots are fearing attack from chemtrail activists. You know, somebody might point a laser pointer at them or shoot them down with some kind of nefarious or
as it's funny you should mention that. Surface
to air message. You know,
it's funny you should mention that because my sister bought me one of them laser pointers for Christmas to play with the cat with. You know, the cats chase that stuff around. And just before coming on this interview, I saw it lying on the table. I was like, I wonder if I could point that at a chemtrail plane.
You could. It's certainly not something we'd advocate doing.
Of course not. I mean, you always have these ideas, but you never do them because they put risk to either persons or private property, and those are the two things that I wish to protect from all enemies, you know, including myself.
Yeah, well, including anyone who sprays anything from the air. But, yeah, look, I mean, we've got documented evidence that shows commercial passenger carrying jets are doing this, and the last thing we'd want to do is put those lives in jeopardy, pilots, crew and passengers.
Are there actually passengers on these commercial jets at the time that the spraying is commencing? I want to know, because I have seen pictures online of the interiors of these alleged chemtrail planes with tanks and so on and so forth that have replaced all the general seating areas. Do you have any information to that effect?
Yeah, we've got evidence that suggests and supports the fact that these are passenger-carrying jets. Passengers do get off the destinations. That much is pretty obvious. Having said that, though, you know, there are specifically fitted out tanker jets, and these are military and or private contractors where these whole interiors are stripped out. And these guys, I mean, they're out for hours and hours. These are the ones that you see doing the loops and the circles and, you know, specifically not going anywhere except up and down a range, back and forward flying sort of thing to create and generate coverage. But they're augmenting that with definitely commercial aircraft. And, you know, it's just that too many of them up there that these would be empty aircraft. I mean, these guys are in it to make a buck as well. The airlines are complicit. I mean, straight after 9/11, it was thought that perhaps the airline industry would crash completely because of the lack of tourism. And, you know, I was in Malaysia and Kuala Lumpur the month afterwards, and you could have fired a rifle down KL International Airport and not hit a single soul. And that place goes for miles, you know. So, you know, I think the NWO and their affiliates have gone to the airlines and said, look, here's our great geoengineering idea to save the planet. Here's a great way for you guys to make a few extra bucks and, you know, augment your profit line at the end of the day. So they're complicit, they're involved, and passenger jets are spraying.
When you ask somebody a tough question and you know that they don't want to answer it, you see physical responses and reactions in their body language. I would like to ambush airplane company CEOs with a camera, ask them these questions, and look for those physical reactions to perhaps add weight to that argument that the higher echelons within the CEO culture and what have you are in fact aware of this. Perhaps they're not aware of its implications, and they think that it, and they actually are duped into believing the hype about it being so good for everybody.
Mm.
But
they certainly sold a story, that's for sure.
Question being, how could they possibly believe that if the only time when they're given this story, they are never given any possibility of negative connotations or anything of that nature? Maybe they're just not suspicious at all, you know. And actually, the point that I was trying to make there, and I messed it up, is if they're spraying and it's for a good purpose, why aren't they telling anybody about it?
Hmm. Well, that's because, you know, geoengineering is only just starting to become a mainstream thing now. But the street vernacular chemtrails is what scares the hell out of them because, you know, it's a poisonous chemical trail. They're not going to tell anybody about this. They're not going to tell anybody that they're complicit in poisoning people and that people are actually paying to get on their flights while they're flying around poisoning people, you know. They're not going to tell us, Vinny. We're going to have to force it out of them literally one way or the other.
Yeah. Waterboarding, I think, will work. Now, I'm just joking, of course.
Of course.
Yeah. You wouldn't be able to waterboard a CEO, you know. They'd enjoy it too much. Now, when we talk about chemtrails to the general population, I think my mate Jono took me out drinking with a couple of his mates, Rat and Germ. Their names were actually Rat and Germ.
nice one.
They asked me, oh, do you believe in this chemtrail nonsense? And I go, well, actually, I was the person to lead the first, second, and third chemtrail protests in New Zealand history. And, you know, just this, this, I think the word is malevolence. Utter disrespect and this kind of this air of superiority complex up in the mind, you know, starts to glaze over their drunken eyeballs, and it occurred to me that entire night I was being insulted, and what was even funnier than me being insulted by people who knew nothing is how easy it was to turn their own arguments back around on themselves and make them look like the foolish and crazy ones.
Yeah. Look, I don't like to do that to people, but there's a time and a place where obviously it's called for, it's required to do that. And, you know, look, I've been around this thing long enough to know that there's only a certain set of arguments that that pertain to the whole thing, and then everything else is factual outside of that. The trolls and the shills would like to keep you in a closed loop. You know, it's the contrail, chemtrail debate. Never goes anywhere, never has, never will. It's when you start pulling out the facts and figures that relate to geoengineering, the mountains of, you know, scientific data and proof from the communities, the chief scientists of Australia. You know, it's when you start pulling out all of that information, the IPCC reports. I mean, you know, the IPCC just came out recently, said you can't stop this because it's gonna have a flow-on effect that we're talking about. You cannot stop geoengineering. We have to keep going now we've started. So, I mean, this stuff it's in the mainstream. It's in the mainstream.
It's admitted.
Yeah, it's admitted virtually. But, you know, you call it a chemtrail. It's no. That's an aircraft condensation trail. Geoengineering is different. You know, how does it look different? It's one white line or another, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think in general conversations with people, you're not carrying around the IPCC report. You're not carrying around a documentary DVD per se. These are just normal interactions that you have with people on the street.
Not very prepared then.
Exactly. And at a protest, it would be different because you are prepared. That is the reason you're there. But you don't. Most people do not carry all of their materials on them at any one time, just in case a random conversation with somebody pops up about chemtrails, do they? It's not something you really plan and prepare for if you're just an average person. Chemtrail activists, sure, those who are very prepared and very onto it. I have a number of flyers and DVDs in my home here, so if the occasion calls for it, I can whip them out. The difficulty is, even then, even then, the cognitive dissonance starts to set in and people simply will not believe it, even if they've seen incontrovertible evidence to the contrary of their incorrect beliefs.
No, I agree 100%, mate, but yeah, I mean, if you're going to get this message out, you have to be prepared. And I was taught a really good lesson in June last year when I was in the UK. I ducked down from Scotland to London for a few days, and I spent time with Mona Norman and Max Bliss, Olga and David Lim, all those guys, the UK Skywatch guys, and what a blessing that was. It was a wonderful time. Everywhere you go with these guys, though, they've got pockets full of postcards. They've got information to hand out. They're prepared. You know, they'll walk around with a protest placard, you know, an A3 size placard on a stick. I did this with Max for a day. We went from the from Oxford into London. We went to the Westminster Arms, which is the pub the local pollies go to. We saw and tried to get a conversation going with Jack Frost in the street. Jack Frost. We got interviewed by the London Times outside the Westminster Arms, and all because we had this this banner. It was London Times Online. It was behind the paywall. We never found the article in the end, but it was interesting. They just saw the banner in the pub window. But everywhere we were going, every conversation we had was about geoengineering. You'd see Max would just see someone look at that sign, and he'd be straight on. Oh, g'day, mate, you heard about this, you know? He'd pull something out of his pocket and be pointing at the sky. You go anywhere with Max Bliss in London, allow an extra few hours. It just takes you a phenomenal amount of time to get anywhere with the guy. But you have the best time doing it, I can tell you.
It's
the most awesome fun.
That's called the chemtrail crawl. It's like it's like a pub crawl for activists, you know.
Pretty much, mate, pretty much. We had a great conversation with the Irish owner, a guy called Jimmy, owns the Westminster Arms there. And he'd spotted our sign, and he came over and said, "Oh, what's this about, lads?" And we didn't know who he was at the time, you know. So we gave him the rundown, told him what we're doing, and he probably spent sort of 20 minutes with us. And then he wanders over to the bar and calls the barkeep over. "A couple of pints for my friends over here, you know." And come back, reintroduced himself as the landlord of the establishment. We're like, "Oh, thanks for checking us out, Jimmy." And Max said to him, what kind of odds are you going to give us here? And he said, "Oh, 500 to 1 that you'll get the message out." So and he was a bright boy, this guy. So we had a good laugh at him. He looked after us and had some good times there. But you've got to be prepared. That's the thing. If you're going to take this message out, you know, the amount of times I'm out on the street and I suddenly look up and see a trail going over, and, you know, I've had people go, "Oh, look at that, you know, an aircraft condensation trail." And I've not had something in my pocket to pull out and give to them, and I rue those moments. I go, "Oh, you need to be more prepared." So
I can
relate
to
this year,
that.
Certainly, I'm going to be prepared going anywhere, you know.
Yeah, I can relate to that a little bit. As a cameraman, the one lesson that I've learned is that the best stuff happens when the camera's off.
Yep. Guaranteed.
You know, and sometimes, let's say, for example, do you take your weekends off? Right, because I do 5 days a week of radio broadcasting talking about this kind of stuff. And some days you just want to switch off and just give your brain a rest. You know, you know what I'm saying? Can you empathize with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, you've got to do that. You've got to take time for yourself. I take my weekends on. As soon as I've got time away from work, I'm busy doing this. So, you know, life is 24/7. Obviously, being in touch with and networking and growing activism around the world and being, you know, connected to the global leaders means that you've got to work into the small hours most nights to have that connection and connectivity. But, yeah, you know, like anything, you know, you can burn yourself out. I've seen a number of activists burn out just doing this. They haven't taken the time to keep life in balance. And balance is the key to life. So, you know, I know when I'm starting to feel a bit run down with all of this mentally, I might just take some time out, flick the whole thing off and go and watch a movie or something for a couple of hours or, you know. But I feel, you know, at the end of the day, these guys aren't going to take a break from doing what they're doing, even though I need to keep things balanced. Certainly need to be working on the high end of the scale rather than, you know, as a hobby sort of thing. You know, it's a 24/7 proposition, really.
Well, I think you're right, and the film I Am Legend, Will Smith does a very good story in there about Bob Marley, who was had an assassination attempt on his life a day or two before a concert, and a day or two later he walked out on stage and performed for everybody. He was famously quoted as saying, "If those who wish to destroy this world don't take a day off, then neither
exactly,
can I."
Yeah. Yeah,
however, yeah. He died. and we no longer have the ability to enjoy his live music because he didn't take a day off, I'm betting.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Look, I mean, you got to live your life as you see it, Vinny. You know how it is. You don't want any candle left over when you go, mate. Burn at both ends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Allegedly. Allegedly. And it is all about balance, I think, and I feel like pressure. Okay, so let's say, what's your motivation? Well, I had a Facebook status the other day. You might like this, actually, Paul. I said, sometimes I lose my motivation, and then the very next day I hear about some news about some new law that's getting passed to strip me of my rights and then facilitate my orderly annihilation. And then I remember, oh, that's right, I almost forgot that I was about to be exterminated, and my motivation returns.
Yeah, you know, that's a classic.
Yeah, sometimes you know, going to sleep for 8 hours has a lower priority than taking a dirt nap.
Yeah, mate, you know, grab it when you can, definitely. But yeah, exactly. I mean, look, you know, we're in the process of being exterminated like bugs, being sprayed from a height, and, you know, I don't think there's a lot of time for people to be taking vacations. I see Obama's taking a lot of nice vacations to the chagrin of the American taxpayer lately, but he's got minions and things, you know. When I've got minions, I might take some time off, Vinny, but I don't think so until then, mate.
Well, I'd love to have, like, those minions out of Despicable Me, like...
Yeah,
that's it. just a whole bunch of morons or something like that, just to do menial tasks, like, I don't know, run the tax department or something. It'd be great. And I've got this idea as well that we've got a... shall we say, a lack of professionalism. Like, when we were talking earlier before about getting the message out and doing so effectively, and how we can sometimes feel a little bit disappointed about a small amount of people turning out to protests, what occurred to me, quite amused at that moment, was, yep, we're not marketing enough. and people sometimes accuse me of being unprofessional. And as far as I know, the world's currently run by professionals. How's that working out for us?
Yeah, not real well, mate. You got to do something a little bit different. But at the same time, I mean, we need to portray and present ourselves in as professional a way as possible. So just in the interest of being relatable on the street, you know, if we're in happy pants and, you know, we've got a bong hanging out of our pocket and we're trying to tell people about chemtrails or, you know, that sort of thing, it's not going to read very well with the average Joe on the street. And yeah, that's where we need to connect. We need to wake society up at that level, at the street level, where, you know, normal people are out just doing normal things in a normal day and being abnormally sprayed.
Yeah.
You know, so I always try and put a professional front and face on with anything that I do, wherever we go, just in the interest of being relatability.
Yeah.
However, you know, nothing wrong with a bit of larrikinism, and your sense of humour is quite well known around the community, Vinny, so it's appreciated.
Well, I think it's kind of like a... I think, what was his name? The White House science czar, Ron Emanuel. Rom Emanuel, I think. And he said that we needed a cognitive infiltration of groups like 9/11 Truth and whatnot. And I like that term, cognitive infiltration, not because he said it and because of the implications of him saying it and the government. I plan to cognitively infiltrate the public. Okay, so so when I go out to the protests, I have cuffs around my wrists, mm-hmm. a collar around my neck, and a Masonic tie. And they think this makes me trustworthy, so they listen to me.
Right.
Because I look like a, I look just like a slave, and the, and they, oh well, this guy's a slave like me. I'll listen to them for an extra couple of minutes. You know, just have some fun with them. Why not? Why not? I mean, just because we're being exterminated and sprayed like cockroaches doesn't mean we can't have a few laughs.
Got to have a sense of humour, mate. Definitely got to have a sense of humour. That's for sure.
Well, you live longer. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, my very special guest, chemtrail activist from Australia, Paul Mack. Back in just a few minutes.
Right here is paradise. So close, face to face, side by side. Every breath we take together.